Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino. On this episode, we talk with author and entrepreneur Christian Espinoza. He is a renowned thought leader, most known as the best-selling author of The Smartest Person in the Room, which explores the limitations of seeking validation through achievement and the desire to be the brightest intellect in any room. With a deep desire to inspire others to harness their innate wisdom, overcome perceived barriers, and summon the courage to tread new paths, he authored his latest book, The In-Between, Life in the Micro. He is a dynamic entrepreneur that built and successfully sold Alpine Security, a cybersecurity business. He founded and currently leads Blue Goat Cyber. He also has an array of professional and personal development certifications. He's got a great story. Enjoy.
Well, hey, man, it's great to meet you. Thank you for taking a minute out. And I want to begin our conversation with what we lived through for the last 3.5 years, going through a global pandemic. How did you get through it and how did it change you?
It changed me in a number of ways. I had just started dating someone that lived in Ireland, and we had all these plans. And then literally I flew to Ireland, and while I was over there, they decided to close the U.S. border. So I had to make a decision to stay there or come back to the U.S. So I decided to stay there, and the borders were closed to people later on that were outside of the U.S., so she could never come visit me. So I ended up spending, during COVID, I traveled quite a bit to Ireland and to Portugal, and I probably spent about 200 plus days, maybe closer to 250 out of country. And over there in the U.S., people like to think that the freedom was been restricted quite a bit during COVID. But over there, literally, you couldn't drive more than 5 kilometers from where you're staying. And there are police stops all over the place to like stop you and ask you what you're doing and where you're going and all this. And it was pretty intense in other countries compared to when I came back to the U.S. It's like I could do whatever, just had to wear a mask. And then professionally, my business, Alpine Security, my first cybersecurity business, suffered quite a bit. We lost a lot of clients because we held in-person training. That was cybersecurity training. That was one of the things we did. And we also did a lot of medical device testing. And so a lot of people, because of uncertainty, didn't want to move forward with the projects that we had already had lined up. And I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and I developed blood clots in my left leg and almost died. I think it's attributed to the vaccine, because I was generally a pretty healthy person before then. I'm healthy now, but you know, it affected my life in quite a few different ways.
Interesting. Johnson & Johnson, I haven't heard that. That's the one that I got, because that was the one where you only needed to get one jab.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because my son, actually, he's on the spectrum, and we got COVID in November of 2020. It was pretty early on. And then we ended up getting the vaccine. But he had a seizure in January of that year and never had a history of any of that. Right. And I've even broached that with medical people. Hey, you know, is there any conclusive evidence right now that there is a possibility that DNA and genetic codes were scrambled because of this? Of course, no one's going to be able to say anything, whether or not they have a Hippocratic oath hunch or whatever they have. Plus, research just isn't even out on it yet. But anyways, it's interesting. Because I haven't heard a lot of people that got the Johnson, and I know I did. So that's wild. Oh.
Yeah, and that's the one that was attributed to the blood clots. But before then, you know, I'm an Ironman triathlete, so I'm in pretty good shape, you know. And then I got that vaccine, and then it kind of took me down for a while, but I'm pretty much fully recovered now.
So I went to a wedding in, what was it? It was probably like March 10th, I think. And it was right when all of this started with COVID. And the couple that got married had this enormous, wonderful trip to Ireland planned, and they still went, and they sent pictures, and everything was empty. Half of the things they wanted to do, they couldn't do. So when you said Ireland, but we always joke around that party, that wedding, was the last party before the show shut down, because after that everything was but at any rate, they talked about going over there and how bizarre it was and how restrictive and it was different than the States.
Yeah, if they went to downtown Dublin, like everything was shut down except the grocery stores.
You
know, which is strange, because there's like all these streets with all the pubs that everyone wants to go to, but they're all closed.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure.
It's like a ghost town. Yeah,
exactly. Well, I heard people, you know, having a jazz radio show, I'd interview musicians that were right next to Times Square. And I remember one guy, his name was Paul. He was telling me how empty it was. And it was so eerie the way he was explaining it. Because, yeah, I mean, that's another place where you would never expect that Times Square would just be empty at any point, you know. So
yeah, and the other thing is, like, my favorite band, I had bought tickets, is Nightwish is my favorite band, and I had bought tickets to see them all over the world, and of course all the shows were canceled, and then they're rescheduled and they're canceled again. So I finally got to see them when they came to the US last year, so that was cool. But it was like 2 years delay, and then in the meantime their bassist quit because he got upset with not being able to tour live, you know. Things it affected a lot of things that I don't think we focused on too much. We just think it was didn't affect us that much, but I think it did.
Oh yeah, it did. Absolutely. So let's get to the heart and soul of what you do for a living. I'm going to put you in front of a bunch of third grade students. It's career day. And one of the kids is curious and says, "Hey, what do you do for a living?" How do you answer them?
I help medical devices become secure so hackers can't get into them. So if a kid's grandparent or parent is in a hospital, on average, there's 14 devices connected to the patient or to the bed or for monitoring. And those devices often are hackable by someone trying to hack into the device, and they can cause grave damage. So what I do is make sure those devices are secure so someone's loved one can get the treatment they need without fear of like a drug infusion pump being hacked and increasing the flow rate of something that could be dangerous.
Okay. So what did you want to be in the third grade? What was your dream to grow up and become?
I grew up in a very chaotic environment. So my aspiration was to get out of my environment. My mother was addicted to drugs and pain meds and everything. And it was very chaotic, and we were very poor on welfare and food stamps and WIC, which is government cheese, and, you know, powdered milk. So my desire was to get out of my situation, and I worked hard to get out of it. I focused in school and academics, and I was able to get a scholarship to pretty much every university I applied to. And I ended up going to the Air Force Academy, which is a military institution, because, you know, it was everything was paid for, and I thought it would set me up best for my career.
So how did you get your start? How did you get your professional start? How did technology become kind of your focal point? How did it all begin for you?
Kind of by accident, I guess. I joined the Air Force Academy with the intent on flying jets. I saw the movie Top Gun, and I know that's Navy, but I became kind of obsessed with flying jets and that lifestyle. And then a couple years before I graduated, they made a lot of cutbacks. And so the slots were basically taken away. So I lost my pilot slot. But when I went to the academy, I majored in electrical engineering, because I read somewhere a long time ago that if you have an engineering degree, undergraduate degree with an MBA, it's super marketable. And, like, given my childhood, I didn't have a lot of options. I wanted options. So because I lost the pilot slot, I ended up going into communications, which is like IT, basically, in the military. And that's what I did for the 6 years I was in active duty, communications, which is some cybersecurity and some IT and designing networks and installing networks at different airports and things like that.
Okay. So who's been a hero for you? Who's been an inspiration that's fueled your desire to get out of what you were going through in the earlier part of your life and to be successful these days?
I've had lots of heroes. I think probably the early on, one of the biggest influences was Tony Robbins. I remember reading his book, Unlimited Power, and it changed my perspective on a lot of things. I mean, I read that when I was, late high school, actually. And I was fortunate enough to go to a couple of his events in person and do the firewalking and all that. And I think he's probably been one of the biggest influences, and there's lots of them. I try to take what I can learn from anyone that's further along in a certain part of the journey than I am. Like David Goggins, I find him inspiring from an athlete perspective and pushing through and all that. So I think probably Tony Robbins has been the biggest influence.
So you may have already answered this question, but if you can meet anybody on the planet right now and spend some time with them, who would it be?
Anyone alive?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a tough question. There's a lot of people I wouldn't mind meeting and getting to know. I think I was talking last night a little bit about politics with my girlfriend, and we have different views. And, you know, everyone's got a specific impression of someone without actually knowing what they're like. And one of the things we were talking about was Donald Trump for some reason.
Yeah.
So everyone seems to have the media view of Donald Trump. And I'm a believer. You don't really know somebody unless you talk to them in person. So I guess if I had to pick one person right now, I'd probably pick Donald Trump, because all I know is what the TV talks about. But I don't know the person who he actually is, you know.
Right.
We think we know. But that would be interesting to see if he's the way he's portrayed in the media or if he's something completely different.
Yeah, for sure. So what's your motivation every day? You're obviously highly motivated, pretty accomplished with what you do. What is that fuel for you? What gets you up every day? What gets you to evolve and be who you are?
I think there's three main things that I am trying to accomplish in my life. And if I look back at all the things I do, these three things are pretty common, like in my books, in my companies, in my leadership style. So the three things are I try to get people to uncover their innate wisdom. I think we all know inside what we want to do and how to do it. We just got these blocks that come up and kind of blocked us from living the life we want to live. So that's the first thing. The next thing is to help people develop the skills to take the first step and the courage to take that step. So you know, basically uncover their innate wisdom, get over the perceived barriers, and develop the skills and the courage to take the new steps. Because I think a lot of us go through life just kind of like going through the motions. And when we're on our deathbed, I've read lots of books about this, people always have regrets about not asking that woman out, not going for the job they wanted, not taking risk. And I would like to help people prevent having those regrets when they're laying there on their deathbed.
So of all the things that you've done professionally, especially writing the book, The Smartest Person in the Room, what's been the best fan letter, best success story that you've been involved with?
There's been quite a few. I would say, you know, my latest book, The In-Between, Life in the Micro, I've got a lot of reviews in that book already. And when I read a review and it looks like it's changed someone's life for the better, that to me is a measure of that I'm hitting the mark. I think professionally, one of the stories or impacts I've had is I've had people work for me before, and I am very empowering. I try to get people to do what they want to do. And I've had one person, she used to be my COO of my previous company, and her passion was to always do voiceover, voice recordings, like narration. And she decided to start doing that. And I think it's great, because I don't necessarily think if someone's betraying me if they decide to do something different with their career. And that to me is a measure of success, that she felt comfortable enough and developed the courage to do the things she really wanted to do. And I felt like, you know, I played a little bit of a role in that.
So what's the best advice you've ever gotten?
The best advice I've ever gotten, there's been a lot of good advice. I think the best advice for me is to develop clarity. I think one of the things that holds people back and holds me back on a daily basis is not having clarity on what I want to achieve in my life or what I'm trying to accomplish. When you have crystal clear clarity, you know the steps. So through like coaching I've been through, there's a lot of focus on clarity. Like, and it needs to be specific. Like, if you want to have a certain type of relationship, you need to have that specificity and clearly define the person you want to be with. Otherwise, you kind of get what you get. And that applies to all things in life. So I think finding that clarity and consistently making sure you're on target with it is probably the best advice I've received.
So of all of the things that you've done professionally, everything that's evolved into who you are today, what are you the proudest of?
I'm the proudest of, I would say, my first book. And it gave me a stepping stone to write my second book. It's very hard to write a book and put yourself out there. And I think writing the book and that process should be transformational to the author as well as people that read it. So writing that first book was transformational for me, but it also shifted me to a point where I'm not afraid to be authentically me or talk about the things that I did wrong or the problems I'm having in my life or the challenges I've overcome and be vulnerable. And I think that first book helped me develop the courage to write the second book. So I would say that transformation that took place is what I'm most proud of.
So let's say you have a dream tonight. You run into the 18-year-old version of you, and you could give that young version of you a piece of advice based on the life you've led, the wisdom you've gained. What advice would you impart on that young version of you?
Follow your dreams sooner. You know, I think for me, I wanted to follow what society wanted. I wanted the 9-to-5 job, the mortgage, the car, all that. And I had that, even though I knew that really wasn't for me. So it took me a lot of time to kind of unravel and start my own business and do the things that I knew I was compelled to do, but I kind of fell into the trap of listening to society and other people.
Yeah.
And that put me further. If I would have done the things I knew I wanted to do sooner, I'd be much further along.
So everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, clients, colleagues, readers, but you ultimately run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
I think I am adventurous and a risk taker, and I have a good heart and try to influence people in a positive manner. I say a lot of people think I'm a risk taker. I am. I like things where there's a waiver or you could die. Like I've done 300 skydives. I've climbed 2 of the 7 summits. So I started businesses. I'm someone that goes for it and goes all in.
So if you could see one event in human history, if you can get into a time machine, what event would you love to have seen with your own eyes?
I think about this quite often. I think it's interesting, like the influence that Hitler had over people to get them to do such atrocious things. So I wouldn't want to go through, you know, that obviously, but it'd be interesting to see how that all happened, because it's so bizarre to me that someone can be so influential on something that is so atrocious at the same time. So I would like to understand that from a human behavior and influence perspective better.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So if anyone wants to pick up the new book, previous books, learn more about you, anything about your world, where do they go?
My website, christianespinoza.com, or I'm on pretty much all social media, so they can follow me on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Instagram as well.
Thank you, Christian. This has been great, man. Thank you for opening up. Thanks for your story, and have a great 2024.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Joe.
Thanks for tuning in to another famous interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, business, spirituality, music, and more from around the globe. Our esteemed theme music was composed and produced by the great E.E. Pointer of Kansas City's River Cow Orchestra. If you want to hear more interviews, visit the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino channel on YouTube. You can also find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.